Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators. And today, we are coming from my recovery space. I recently had surgery. Right up next to that, I had COVID, so I've, you know, had a little rough time with my health lately, but I'm getting back there. And today we're going to talk about spiritual bypassing and other obstacles that impede recovery from narcissistic abuse. So that's three things I'm recovering from: COVID, surgery, and narcissistic relationship. And so since I'm recovering, it seemed only appropriate that we talk about recovery. The danger of not playing the narcissist game and then not paying the piper. This is a listicle, you know, like one of those things that list everything for you, with 10 things that can get in our way and prevent us from recovering. So there are many things that can get in our way of recovery, especially from narcissistic abuse. And some of them can seem harmless and even helpful, but they're not. So that's, you know, just not how it works. It's more complicated. Some of the things that we choose to assist in creating new, stronger versions of ourselves can actually do more harm than good. Spiritual bypassing. I'm sure you've heard of this, right? Spiritual bypassing. Spiritual bypassing is a way of hiding behind spirituality, alternative practices, or misguided advice that prevents people from acknowledging what they are actually feeling, and it distances them from both themselves and others. In other words, spiritual bypassing is sort of like self-medicating. It's a form of escape so that you don't have to face your role in this, so that you can make sure that that never happens again. And it also makes it to where you're sort of numbing up everything, because it's an avoidant behavior. Let's see, what do I want to say next to you? Therefore, some therapies and well-meaning people can unravel any possibility for progress if you're doing the spiritual bypassing. Being aware of the potential for harm can help you navigate the journey towards wellness and ultimate freedom. Freedom, snaps for freedom. So here are the 10 things that can get in your way and can unravel recovery. Okay, here we go. Numero uno, the law of attraction and manifesting. You know, it's often said that you attract what you put out in terms of energy and vibrational levels. The law of attraction is a type of spiritual bypassing that is closely related to victim blaming. I would say it's also closely related to magical thinking and delusional thinking even. And so make no mistake, nobody is a narcissist magnet. I actually have thought that I was, but I am not. Because that's not how that works. You know, what do I want to say about this? Sorry. I just have notes here and I'm trying to figure out what to say about my notes. I'm a little bit, under the weather. You can be a narcissist magnet who attracts disordered, predatory, cluster B types of people and other disastrous abuse and co-opting of identity that follows. It is not your fault for winding up in an abusive relationship, regardless of whether it's a partner, a friend, or a family member. Similarly, you cannot simply manifest a quick recovery and perfect life by raising your vibrational level, visualizing it, repeating mantras like prayers, or doing extensive cord cuttings and etheric surgeries and stuff like that. Sure, I think that those could be tools. Some people say it's messing with stuff you shouldn't be messing with. That's not exactly, if you're a Christian, if you're religious, you know, that leave it alone, just pray about it. Maybe there's something to be said about that. But that you just, you know, even if these things were effective and it's only part of your recovery menu, they're not a standalone. You know, they need to be accompanied by rigorous daily strategies and support from various sources. It's like it takes a team to recover. So you can't just manifest stuff. Let's look at this from a psychological level and not a energetic level. Psychologically speaking, if you think that you are, you know, you have low self-esteem and you have desensitized abuse from early childhood abuse and trauma, it feels like home. It feels normal because that's what you're used to. It's not as though you carry that and you're attracting that because it's in you. That's not how that works. But because it has been normalized for you, that makes you more susceptible and open to receiving abuse and accepting it than a normal person who had not had that childhood, who had not normalized abusive violations of boundaries and trauma and all of that. That person would not accept it. They would head for the door, run for the exit, and say, "No, thank you, Mr. Narcissist, Miss Narcissist. I am not going to have any part of this. Bye-bye." And that's how that would work. But so there are things about us that make us susceptible, vulnerable, and desensitized to the horrors of abuse because we've lived with it most of our life and we've accepted that that's how people love each other. They abuse each other and stuff like that. Really doesn't fall under the auspices of manifesting. So be careful with that. Number two. Where's my number two? Okay. Toxic positivity. I just want to say these people are as annoying as you know what. While positive psychology is useful within reason, balanced and all that, it is dangerous as a wholehearted philosophy because it encourages you to repress important so-called negative emotions and peeling back the layers of complex trauma and all of that, which can be messy and painful experience. But, you know, it is best to just buckle up and pay the piper and just do the work. Allowing yourself to recognize your emotions, to feel them, accept them, sit beside them, process them, appreciate them for what they have to teach you or show you, and then to ultimately release them. This is all a process, and it is necessary part of recovery that should never be skipped, denied, repressed, or projected upon others. So all this toxic positivity is like, oh, you know, everything's fine. Don't worry. It's all good. You know, it's just, you know, just whatever. That's just ignoring it, minimizing it, repressing it, holding it back, renaming it, twisting things, denying, lying to yourself. It's a million different things, but it's not okay. Stop being so freaking positive all the time. Sometimes life sucks and sometimes it hands you not just lemons, but rotten, stinky, moldy lemons. What are you going to do with that? You can't even make lemonade with that because it's moldy lemons. And you just have to accept that it's not all going to be roses and puppies and rainbows and unicorns. life isn't that way. You got to be ready for the dips and the downturns and have some coping skills and resilience to deal with that. Number three, how about the well-meaning friends and family with harmful advice? Do you know these people? I think we all do. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. And, you know, I think we all have heard this lovely little platitude. In narcissistic recovery, it is something to take to heart and guard against. You know, conventional wisdom has no place in narcissistic abuse recovery, nor does some kind of generic breakup seven-step of grief process that they hand to you in the little book of recovery. This is a unique experience. It is very different. It is, you know, and it's exclusively for those who have experienced some type of prolonged narcissistic abuse. They're not going to respond to that, the conventional wisdom, the well-meaning remarks. Oh, let's just go have a margarita and get our nails done and it'll be okay. You just need to get out there and put yourself out there and date again. Oh, just get over it. You know, it was a toxic thing anyway. Just snap out of it. These kind of suggestions are ludicrous. Not as in the person's name ludicrous, but as in the sense that it just makes no sense. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. That is not how you recover. You know, conventional wisdom is just, there's no place for it. Neither is the generic grief process that they just tell you about. So the recovery that we experience after narcissistic abuse is something else. It's different. It's not better, worse, more, less. I mean, it's different. This isn't a contest for who has it the worst, right? Who has the biggest broken heart? Who's the most pathetic, you know, wreck after, you know, being discarded? Well, you know, everybody is going to suffer with that. And it's complex recovery. It's like a different beast in almost every way possible. So when people respond with all this well-intended advice, you know, they're coming from a different universe that has, and they have zero understanding of what you're experiencing. It can do more harm than good. So take it with a grain of salt. And just gently ask them to refrain from just speaking about it at all. Make a contract with them. Give a safe word or something like, you know, when we say that word, it's time to stop talking about it. Mine is farfanugan. It's my safe word. You must find your own support network. And they need to actually have experienced this thing called narcissistic abuse. They need to be your tribe and they need to speak of your language. Speak of your language. Okay. You know, the whole world is in distress as everything seems to be crumbling and on fire and unraveling all around us. And there seems to be a shortage of mental health professionals. To make matters worse, I can tell you, it's almost impossible to find a therapist who understands narcissism. Really understands narcissism, not in the pop psychology trending. Everybody's the narcissist kind of yakety yak that goes on too much these days, let me say, but really, really understands all the little nooks and crannies of narcissism, what it is, what it's done, what it does to you, why it takes years to get over it, all that. They don't get it. They haven't had that training. And so just because they have a PhD at the end of their name, it really doesn't mean anything to help you navigate this perilous journey. And, you know, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. So if a therapist pulls out their handbook of divorce or grief or trauma and has little true understanding of what's going on, it can be detrimental and it can be deadly. Step away and do something else. You know, in the future, I hope they're all required to get the professional development hours that do a really deep dive of extensive training on narcissistic abuse recovery and how it's different from other things. But we're not there yet. We're not there. And with everything that's happening in the world, it's almost possible to find a therapist right now anyway. Number five, everything may not happen for a reason. Wow. Can we think about that for a second? Yikes. Could that be right? Because there's people who say, well, everything happens for a reason. No, sometimes there's just random insanity. There's just evil among us. And then evil can be winning for short spurts. We know how it ends. Righteousness, virtuous, goodness, godly stuff wins in the end. But in the meantime, there's small battles that are lost to evil, and that's all there is to it. It has encroached upon your life. The door was open and it just walked right on in. And it didn't happen for a reason, really. This idea is an explosive, just waiting to detonate kind of idea, because it removes all agency and personal empowerment over our lives by accepting that it was simply meant to be. People would say, it's all in God's plan. I accept now that God did have a hand in all of this in some way. And it's important to trust that happens, but we have to let him. We have to get out of our own way and shove other people out of the way who are standing in the way and let him do his thing. You've got to surrender. You've got to submit and just quit chasing things and that are really hard, because that's a pretty good sign that it's not for you if you're having to work that hard at it. Stop having all this stuff that you just have to have or you just really want, and just stop and let things happen naturally and come to you. Because if it comes that way, it's coming from God and not from your own personal whatever. And so to say that everything happens for a reason, I was watching on the news. I don't know when you're watching this. This could be old news by the time you hear this. Who knows what's going to happen? But I was watching the news and I saw video footage that there was a relief truck in Gaza that was delivering food. And the Israeli forces opened force because supposedly they said the truck was being swamped by people and that there was so much danger. They just opened fire, like, get back, because it was totally out of control. And they said most of the people were run over by the truck or trampled in a stampede by starving, famine-stricken people trying to get to the food. And the Palestinians say, no, the Israelis shot and killed all these people, like 100 of them. And I bring this up. Why do I bring this up? Do I believe that that happened for a reason? Do I believe that God he pulled the strings on all of this and had that happen to teach something or to show something or whatever thing? We don't know what his big plan is. And I really don't think that. I think that for a moment, evil was winning. For a moment. Like it is all around us right now. In the smaller battles. Little victories here and there. And in the end, like every time there's any random horrible act of suffering, torture, violence, or injustice, anytime a human being surrenders their soul to the dark side, that's a little victory for the dark side, for the evil side. But it's not the ending, right? Because we know who wins in the end. And there just may be a lot of bad stuff that happens between here and there. So, we have to think about that, how to perceive that. And that, in the beginning, handing it all over and resigning yourself to the will of the universe or to God may not build your strength and resolve needed to get through the challenge of putting yourself back together again. But everything in its own time and season, right? A close cousin of this idea is the be grateful for the opportunity to grow philosophy. While there's some truth in that, that this was a lesson, it did teach you something that you needed to know. Something did need to bring you closer to God. Something did need to shake things up and remove a person who was maybe filled with demons or at least an evil influence, a destructive influence, harmful to you and all of those around you. That person needed to go. He needed to be removed. Even though we feel like we're absolutely crumbling and disintegrating without that person, still it was the right thing that they are now no longer in the picture. You see that, right? If you don't, you need to really sit down and think about that. Because even though it feels counterintuitive, like, how could that be? I can't live without them. They're like oxygen to me. Blah, blah, blah. Yep, been there. But in the end, you know, maybe they shouldn't have been there. In the beginning, you saw those red flags. You heard that intuitive voice telling you, and you did it anyway. I know you heard them. I know you saw it, because they all set off those flares. They all set off those warnings in the beginning. And 99% of the time, their targets just ignore it and like, no, I'm not going to look at that. I don't want to look at that because I really want that. I'm not going to look at this because I want that. And so, no, I can't hear you. And they just, that's the end of it. So while I can tell you that I myself came very close to choking a few people out in the first year of my recovery by trying to tell me that, you know, I had an opportunity, didn't I want the opportunity to grow? Well, at that time, I wasn't in a place where I can say, well, you know, I didn't ask for it. Things were going pretty good in fantasy land, you know. Compared to being grounded in reality and looking at what's happening in the world today, you know, it really wasn't half bad living in a shared fantasy with a narcissist. All the, you know, technicolor dreamscape dancing routines and singing and, you know, whatever. And even though part of it was a horror show, the good parts were really good. The bad parts were really bad. Good parts were really good. I might prefer that over this reality. It's like war and famine and civil strife and climate change and extreme weather events and plague and pestilence and pandemics. There's a triple P for you. None of it's good. The economy, woo. Presidential election, yikes. So, yeah. I think we have to keep all of it in perspective when people tell us that, you know, when the time comes, we will learn from this. When the time comes, we will grow, we will change, and we'll be better without that person. When you're in the mix, knee deep in the hoopla, suffering, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not going to make it through the night, that's really hard to hear. And I understand that. And I agree. It is. Oh, Ash, I got to get through these. Oh my. My post-op itchy stitches and stabbing little nerve pains ever present, but I'm going to press through for you guys because y'all need to really hear this. Self-empowerment and independence can be counterproductive. All this stuff about self. Following narcissistic abuse of mind, body, and soul, it's imperative that you learn to fill your own cup, manufacture your own internal validation, and reject your learned helplessness and codependent, unhealthy attachments. With that being said, it's almost impossible to achieve all that without a team of people to support and guide you. You can't do it alone. You just can't. After a relationship with one of these people, you must build a cadre of helpers. This includes narcissistic disorder trained mental health therapists and providers who can do trauma-informed PTSD interventions, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and other forms of dialectical treatment. 2, support groups like CODA, Codependence Anonymous, Divorce Recovery, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Groups, Meetup Groups, Al-Anon, anything with others who have lived experiences with something like this and can speak this language and validate that what you're experiencing is not crazy and offer solace to you during the darkest hours and days. 3, energy work. May or may not be into this, but it's something to think about, which could include yoga, meditation, mindfulness, pranic healing, Reiki, sacral cranial massage, cord cutting, acupuncture, and more. 4, drug-assisted therapy. Yes, that's on the list. This would include a professional licensed provider, not some drug that you go from your street corner, street pharmacist, but from a licensed provider who knows what they're doing. And it can be like ketamine treatment or EDMA therapy, or they're experimenting with mushrooms and just other hallucinogens and stuff, along with interventions and all of that. 5, somatic trauma work consists of several main components, which include Rolfing, body mind centering, Alexander technique, Feldenkrais method, and Laban movement analysis. Yeah. If you don't know what those are, replay this and write them down and go research them. This can also be combined with tools like EMDR. I bet you heard of that one. Breath work, you know, breathing, meditation, visualization, massage, grounding, dance, art, movement, kinesthetic therapies with objects, pattern interrupt techniques to build new neural pathways and stuff like that, and sensation awareness work. Somatic therapy is an important part of recovery because it's in your body and you have to do it if you're going to be okay. The next one, I lost count. I think this is 7. Forgiveness for the unforgivable. There is a thin line between forgiving and enabling, excusing, rationalizing, and clinging to false beliefs that they can be healed or loved back to wellness. They cannot. Can't. It's too late for them. That part of them died, was murdered, did not develop, was halted, did not grow, did not manifest, they don't have it. They don't have it. They're incapable, totally incapable, because they don't have it. So you just have to accept that. It is critically important to forgive at a distance with a firm no contact policy, not in person. Oh, let's hug and make up. Not that kind of forgiveness. No. And forgiving can sometimes look like giving second chances, but it's not. Don't do that. With a narcissistic partner, this is a fatal mistake. It is important to create and maintain firm boundaries at all times with this thing. Okay, 3 more. We're going to make it. 8, repressed or denied anger. I don't really have anything to say about that, except that if you hold, I know someone, she's a client of mine. Horrible things. This her narcissistic husband of 20 some odd years did horrible things and criminal activity and stole a lot of money and property and stuff from her. And how do you not be angry about something like that, right? How do you not feel the injustice of it and the humiliating slap in the face with a wet fish and a F you that comes with them doing that to you? How do you not respond with anger, with a murderous rage, or some desire to get justice at least, or to even the score? It's so hard. But I just want to say, you know, anger can be the impetus to make you act out in a number of self-destructive, self-trashing, toxic and poisonous ways. You got to be careful not to let that be the motivating force behind your actions. You can't act out of anger. You need, or because you're trying to run from it or camouflage it or anesthetize it or whatever. You have to deal with it. You have to figure out a way to get rid of the anger, you know, I don't know what to call it, but, you know, there are ways that you can make it less until finally it just is gone and that you don't have anger anymore. It is what happened. It was unfair. It was horrible. It was unconscionable. It was so wrong and just so, you know, terrible, but it's over and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't control it. And so the longer you're angry about it, the more it's going to compel you to do things that are going to harm you. And you're just getting hurt more and more. They're not suffering. You are. They're not paying a price for you being angry with them. You are. And so you got to just figure out how to let go of that anger, how to process it. That's a conversation for a longer day. The world is fair and just, and karma is coming. This can prevent your recovery. That's what we're talking about. The different things on the list that can prevent your full recovery. And believing that is going to get in your way, because the world is not fair. Life is not fair. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. People don't get what they deserve a lot of the time. And karma, maybe not in this life, maybe in no life. Maybe they're going to go on and be forgiven because of the tragic horror that happened to them when they were so little, they didn't even understand what was happening that made them the way that they are. Wasn't their fault. Who knows what that's between them and God, what happens next after this life. You want them to feel your pain. You want them to empathize and understand the pain that they caused you. They can't. Then you want them to serve some kind of a sentence for it, like maybe in the next world they'll get justice then. Maybe justice is forgiveness. Maybe justice is healing for all of us, including them. The sooner we realize that life is not fair and sometimes the bad guys win, I think the better off we're going to be. It is delusional to pretend that everyone gets what they deserve, because sometimes they don't. So we have to make the best of the hand that we were dealt, without too much bitterness or resentment or envy or shame. And when you think that everything will eventually right itself, you're just tricking yourself into spinning a narrative that goes down a little more smoothly, when actually it's a false narrative. Why sit around wishing and watching and wanting something bad to happen to the narcissist that destroyed your life? Bad things have already happened to them. And that probably is why that they're in they're doing what they're doing in the first place. Here's the last one. Generational trauma is your destiny. It is not. You can stop it. You can stop the cycle. You can break the chain. You can be the one to say, that's enough. No more trauma going on in this family line. You have to recognize, recognizing is not the same as acceptance. Generational trauma is real and it's formidable. But biology is not destiny. Have you heard that before? I used to have a little button and I put it on my purse. I had a purse that had buttons all over it, like 50 buttons. It was so cool. Yeah, that's me, that person, weirdo. Anyway, biology is not destiny. That is really true. It is not your destiny. Scientifically, they have done studies to say, well, genetically speaking, biologically speaking, when it comes to disease and lifespan and yada yada, probably 30% is hereditary in biology, and the other 70% is lifestyle choices, diet, exercise, mental health, all of these other things, which means you've got a 70% chance, odds against overcoming whatever generational trauma you inherited from your great grandma Susie, you know? Those are pretty good odds. You know, it begins when a group experiences a traumatic event that causes economic, cultural, and familial distress. In response, people belonging to that group develop physical or psychological symptoms. On a cellular level, there can be transformation even before the birth, while still in the womb. Chemicals in the body alter as a trauma response and can structure and alter the very structure of the cells themselves, which are impacted. It takes a conscious and persistent effort to end this cycle, but it can be done. And they say you got a 70% chance of pulling it off. Surrendering to the idea that you're a victim of generational trauma is counterproductive. In the recovery process, it renders you helpless and on the receiving end of toxic programming and unhealthy scripting, and all of that is not okay. If that is the case, name it, then go on about finding ways to stop it from continuing. You have the power to do it, to change the script, to flip the script, and rewrite your own ending. So what happens after a relationship with a narcissist or psychopath is that they lay to waste your best made plans of mice and men. They do. It is the darkest night of the soul. It is. And it is an existential, it's an existential annihilation. In despair, it is easy to follow anyone or anything that might offer relief. But sometimes the thing we turn to can delay or prevent healing. And maybe it's just a temporary fix or a misguided concept or whatever. But it becomes another tragedy stacked on top of all of the existing tragedies and that already feel hopelessly insurmountable. So my suggestion is take these 10 warnings, think about them and how they may be holding you back, and then act deliberately with confidence, determination, and commitment that you are not going to be ruined for life, destroyed forever in some existential way, that you're going to be able to cling to that soul that's still alive in you. Yeah, cling to that soul that's still alive in you and fan those flames and say, come on, there's a spark, there's an ember. I want to bring you back to life. I want to help you. And then you do that. You connect with it. And then you work with that part of yourself to give birth to yourself, to grow a new life, because you, unless you're a narcissist, psychopath, or some type of psychopath light, which would be your sociopath or antisocial, unless you're one of those, even if you have borderline personality disorder, you can recover. Even if you have like any other kind of mental health issue, you can recover. A little bit bipolar, you can recover. There's medicine, there's treatment. You can recover because why? You have a soul. You have a living, working soul. It may be damaged, it may be broken, but it's alive. The narcissist, psychopath, and sociopath do not have the working parts. They don't own them that allow them to do what you can do. So as I am recovering from COVID, surgery, and narcissistic abuse, and I'm stuck here in bed, propped up on pillows in my little recovery nest, I'm going to be thinking about you and knowing that this is kicking your you-know-what every which way, challenging you so that you just, you know, you feel like you can't do this. It's, you know, for me, this is March. In June, it'll be 5. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years since I was discarded by my narcissistic husband. And wow, it's like, even though there are parts of me that still hurt and I'm still working on growing and building and nurturing and all of that, I'm not finished. I'm so much better than I was, so much better. And I've come a long way. And so I know it's possible to recover because I've been on this road now for almost 5 long years and I've seen the progress I've made. And it's real. It is real, and it's doable. It's achievable. And I think we can all get there because we, unlike them, are not dead. We have a living, working soul, and hallelujah, praise the Lord. We are alive. We are alive, and we should practice gratitude at being alive, because what's the alternative? Be a narcissist or something like that? No, thanks. I mean, they're so delusional, they don't even know what they are. The few self-aware ones who do know can't change it. So I'm going to go eat something and take a nap. But I want to tell you, you're going to make it if you keep trying and follow my tips here. I don't just pull this out of a hat. I do so much research. I take classes. I read constantly. I listen to lectures. I have a master's degree with a specialization in guidance and counseling, which is kind of a useless degree, I guess. It's like, I don't know, high school guidance counselor. Let me help you make your schedule. Are you everything okay at home kind of counselor, right? But I've built upon that. I've stacked layers and layers and layers of 5 years worth of research and study and just full 100%. You know, up to my eyeballs trying to figure this thing out. So I know what I'm talking about. And when I share these things with you, try to warn you about them or guide you to understand what to do next, I think you can trust me. I'm not charging you anything. I have no program. I'm selling you, nothing. The one-on-one clients that I take, I charge a ridiculously low fee. Because I want to make it accessible to everyone. I can only take 5 people at a time. I've got a little short waiting list. But all in all, that's, you know, and that, you know, I did my taxes recently. He said the money you made from doing consultations with clients and from your writing, your royalties for your writing, is not a whole lot more than what you invested in spending, you know, money on your website and on your security program and on your this and your that. He said, you know, you should be making more. The IRS probably believes you should be making more, but I'm not. I'm not in this for the money. I am in this so that you don't have to go through what I went through, that I give you like a roadmap shortcut so that you don't get lost in the forest like I was. And maybe you can do this in less than 5 years. That's why I'm doing it. It is service work. It's soul work. It's sisterhood and brotherhood. Well, would it be if you were my brother? It wouldn't be brotherhood. It would be like, okay, you get what I'm saying, right? I'm doing it because it heals me. I'm doing it because it's good for my soul. It restores me to be able to help other people. So, yeah. Let's keep going, and it'll be okay. I'm going to go now, and I'll try to put on makeup and look better before I see you next time, because, wow, I have been through the ringer these last two months have been rough, so hopefully the next two are going to get easier, I hope. Okay, peace and love. Good night. Goodbye. Good afternoon. Good morning. Bye.